Welcome to Bitches on Comics. I'm your host, S.E. Fleenor, and I'm having a freaking great day because I'm really excited to be here with another kick-ass interview, our second of this half of the year, but it's the beginning of the calendar year. Time isn't real. I have ADHD, so we're just going to breeze past that. And I'm going to welcome one of my favorite people in existence, the wonderful Monica Estrella Negra. How you doing, Monica?
Oh, I'm just peachy.
I'm just long pause. Peachy. Were you looking at note cards? Were you?
I mean, at this point, I feel like my life needs to be scripted because the shit that I really want to say, I will end up at Guantanamo. Anyway, hi. I'm doing great. Happy Friday.
And that's where I leave the podcast because I'm now physically dead. You have murdered me.
Yes. Essie, guess what? Guess what?
What?
We have the most amazing person talking with us today. So we have the privilege of talking to, and let me just bust out like the long list of awesomeness. So we have the creator of Fabulize Digital Magazine, writer of Taste of Venus, which appears in We Belong, the all-Black, all-LGBTQ sci-fi and fantasy comics anthology, which was also nominated for Best Anthology at the Ignatz Awards for 2024. Writer of Telephone, which will appear in the upcoming Afro Features Comics Anthology, curated by Troy Jeffrey Allen, and writer of the forthcoming series So You Think You Know Static Shock, Erica Hardison. How are you doing today?
I am also peachy. Thank you for having me.
I like the hesitation before peachy. It just feels honest.
Thank you. I appreciate it. This is really so cool. Thank you.
Absolutely. So I'll just jump right off the bat. So Fabulize, what inspired you to create a magazine specifically for Black nerds? And as a Black nerd, I thank you for your dedication to uplifting our community. And I just want to pick your brain about, you know, how that process went, what drove you to make the magazine, and how you go about picking content and your contributors.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm a journalist, so I love media. And I think as I was growing up, something that I, you know, gravitated to were always magazines. I always had a magazine in my head. And like, I didn't even care what it was. It could be parenting magazine. It could be, you know, a cooking magazine, cultural magazine. I just love magazines because it's a mix of, you know, illustrations, photographs, essays, opinion pieces, news, and it centers on like a specific niche, you know? So I've always loved the medium of magazines. And so, of course, I wanted to publish one. You know, being a millennial, I was there when the internet started popping off. So I still remember what it was like pre-internet, and that makes me feel so old to say. But it's the truth. So it's an interesting thing being like, you know, the first generation to have the internet and things that we can do now that we weren't able to do before. You know, like we're able to like publish digital comics. And that wasn't a possibility for a lot of people before. So I am happy with the evolution of media, and I am happy to contribute it because, you know, I feel like having platforms where you have essays and different opinions about different things, especially in this time, is important. Even if it isn't something that goes viral, you know, websites, you know, online magazines, they still serve a part of history. It's still an archive of what's happening in pop culture. And if we can't have physical magazines, we need something that we can go back to, you know?
Absolutely. I'm a fellow millennial. So yes, I definitely remember when, you know, dial-up was a thing. I remember my mom yelling at me for tying up the phone line for downloading one song on Napster that took like maybe 6 hours. I definitely remember those days, and it was. But like, can we talk just about so how that sound? It. You would know by the sound if the connection was going to fail.
If it went fast, you was like, okay, I'm in there. But if it was like, and then it had a little pause, you was like, oh, you might as well hang up and start again.
Yep, the wild, wild west. Kids these days don't know how lucky they have it. Okay, we were all amateur hackers.
We were forged in the crucible. This was what made me a person, you know?
Absolutely.
Oh, and, wow.
To add to that, I feel like the internet, because it connected us to so many other communities, it also was like a really good space for us to realize that, you know, there were other like Black folks that were into the same nerdy things that we were in. And, you know, because, I mean, Black folks have always like done, you know, speculative fiction, any type of like creative endeavor, in some cases have even been trailblazers for creative endeavors. And just a wild question, just to get some perspective from your experience with Black Nerdom, what challenges do you foresee that our community will face during this current life, world, political situation going forward?
Oh, for us or for everybody?
I mean, specifically for like our Black community, like our like subculture of Black like nerds with comics or anime or any type of like speculative fiction that is not considered to be like mainstream Black like arts and culture?
That's a really good, interesting question. I think we're going to see a lot of different takes on Black speculatives in the horror scene. So I think that's something that's going to be emerging over the next couple of years, because like vampires right now are like really hot, vampires and survival mode. And I feel like for most people, well, at least mainstream media wise, you know, the way the default of literature, which is whiteness, views like dystopia is like everyday regular microaggressions that a lot of marginalized communities face. So it's like, you know, they think they know what a dystopia is, but they really don't know, because a lot of times they have perpetuated and also benefit from their own, you know, whiteness, whether it's ignorant or not ignorant on their behalf. So, you know, we're in the fuck around and find out stage of life, and it's going to be hard. I think as Black people, we have to really be aware of classism. I think classism within the Black community right now is going to really come to a boiling point, because, you know, there's going to be a point where people have to realize, is their classism aspirations oppressing other Black people around them? Oof. You know, is your aspirations to live in a condo impacting families who just want their kids to go to a good public school? You know what I'm saying? So that's a real reality right now.
1,000%. Like, especially as we see a lot of, like, I guess I can call them like the Black bourgeoisie, like lining up to support like the current administration and stuff like that. And how like classism will ultimately be like this one thing in the future that is definitely going to cause another rift in the Black community. So I think it's really fascinating on like how classism may also affect access to resources to create. So like, you know, you're talking about like web comics and stuff like that, and like how we didn't have access to that when we were kids because we didn't have the technology. Do you have any concerns about like those resources being limited now, even though like, you know, almost everybody has a smartphone, but not a lot of people have internet at their house, right? So like, if you don't have the resources to create what you need, like a tablet to draw or, you know, stuff like that, do you see that like becoming a potential problem? Or not to get all like serious about socio-political, but these are just things that run through my head.
No, but this is an important question, because this is where culture come from. Culture doesn't come from, you know, the upper class. Culture isn't shaped from millionaires and billionaires. Culture is shaped from working class, everyday people. That's where culture comes from. You know, no one is looking to, like, there's not a bunch of kids that's working around want to be Elon. I mean, there's certain things of, you know, the toxic masculinity that comes from that image that they want to emulate. Yes. But do they want to actually be him? No. And no one says he's really cool like that. That's why he's like on his evil villain shit, because he wants to be part of pop culture. And that's pretty much the issue with all of these weirdos. They want to be part of pop culture. They want to be romanticized. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They want to be Elvis. They want to be lovable. They want to be JFK. You know, I mean, good luck, everybody. Good luck, everybody.
Good luck. Yeah, we are definitely in that fuck around, find out phase. But, like, I also think, and I totally agree with you, somebody once said that, you know, rich people pay poor people to have taste for them. And I've always, like, taken that to heart because of what you mm-hmm. just said about, like, art being created primarily by folks that are in the working class. I mean, like, of course, there are, like, you know, rich people that do art and stuff, but I'm not going to comment any further on that.
They do art because they have the space and the resources to do art.
Exactly.
You know, mm-hmm. every artist that I love, right? And this is one thing I will say. I had the privilege at the time because I went to college during the recession. And that's something I feel like a lot of people do, especially Black girls, like, oh, shit, it's a recession. Ain't no jobs out. Let me go back to school. Try to get another degree. No,
but, like, seriously. I'm currently in school right now.
I'm trying to figure out which way I gotta move. I'm like, should I go back to school? Like,
it's like chess, dog. I'm just like, where can I go to, like, not get the most fucked up? Because I know anything that happens, Black women are gonna be affected the most. So which one can we do?
Listen, so I'm trying to figure out, you know, which way I gotta go. Because listen, bills have to be paid, and
dead ass.
Eggs cost too damn much, and Beyonce is asking for too much at the same time. I can't do all of it at the same time. I cannot do it all. I can't get Beyonce tickets. I mean, Miss Girl finally heard my complaints, you know, to bring her products in store. But I knew Giselle was going to come to Nordstrom because she had her Ivy Park at Nordstrom. So I was like, oh, she going to mm-hmm. bring, you know, sacred to Nordstrom. She going to go to Ulta. I mean, ain't no shade to Ulta. But I thought, you know, her hair product was a little bit expensive. So I just knew she was coming to Nordstrom. But okay, girl, okay. At least you in the store. At least you in the store. That's a step in the right direction. But yeah, I don't have the money to live the way I envision myself living as I was a girl watching Living Single and Girlfriends and, you know, Moesha. Like, this is trash. I'm in the wrong timeline. I want a refund.
I mean, yeah, like, and I'm so glad you mentioned, like, the 90s and Living Single and Girlfriends, because there was such a moment in the 90s where we had, and I feel like we were lucky as, like, millennial Black women to have grown up with, like, sitcoms mm-hmm. that were actually focused around, like, the Black, like, woman's experience.
Mm-hmm. With girls that look like Black girls.
Exactly.
Because that's the important part, because there's a different, at least in my experience, so this is not a collective thing, but I feel like millennial Black women and older Black women have different perspectives when it comes to media and how media has shaped them or has, you know, formed their creativity and how they see things visually with themselves and pop culture. And it's just a difference, you know, even though I don't have the same representation like they do now. Like, I think girls now, I expect girls now to have way higher self-esteem than I had, because the girls have the books, they got comics, they got, I mean, it's not enough. So let me just say that it's not enough. It's never going to be enough to compare the equity space of literature in America, but it's a start in the right direction. I'm just sad that it's as stagnant as it is. I think it could be better. I hope it could be better. There are people who can make it better, but they also choose to, you know, kind of follow the status quo too to benefit themselves. So that's why Absolutely. We're here. And I don't know if that answered your question, but
no, it does. No, you definitely did. And, like, I'm like the queen of going off on tangents, so never apologize, please. But this also leads me into, you know, your work. Like, you are a part of that movement to have representation in these mediums that we love and that we care about. And I just want to say, Taste of Venus, I thought it was awesome because I just love the traditional plot, and I say traditional, of like lesbians like falling in love with each other like in 2 hours and like saying that they're like soulmates. I was like, oh my God, this is actually like a good 95% of my relationships during my 20s. So it's just like, oh my God, you're like the best person I've ever met. You're my soulmate. I love you. I will travel through dimensions to be with you. And I just want to know, what was your inspiration for Taste of Venus?
Okay. So it was a few things. So one, I wanted to create a comic script that I can say that I really put as much effort I could and learn from my previous script. My first script was a mess. My first script was a mess because I had never written a comic before. I've read comics, you know, I've had to analyze comics and preview comics and whatever the case may be, but I had never actually created one. So my first one was a real challenge because I had to kind of like reconfigure my brain on how to tell stories in such short copy, mm-hmm. and also give directions for the artist. So you have to write the script and you also have to give the artist directions and highlights and what angles. And I didn't know what the fuck, like, what you mean angles? I was like, the artist don't know. okay. So I kind of had to have like this big lesson of how to write comics in a very short time. But I learned a lot. And I'm going to be honest, I don't really think I would have been able to even write a comic if I didn't have Fabrice and Crystal from Fair Square Comics editing my script. Because, you know, Fabrice has worked with Marvel. He did some of the Spider-Man noir mm-hmm. issues. Like, he is a real comic book professional. And I had no experience. And for him to, you know, kind of put me on a roll, and to like now to be like nominated in just a short time is like, damn, he did a really good job. She did a good job too. I hope they're proud of me.
Oh, I'm 1,000% sure that they are. And I'm also proud of you because it's hard to like go into a new medium when you mm-hmm. haven't done it before. And when you know it's going to be published and you know it's going to be distributed to like thousands of people, that can be really nerve-wracking. So I commend you on, you know, taking up that task because it worked out wonderfully. And I love Taste of Venus. I know SC loved Taste of Venus as well.
Oh, I love Taste of Venus. I love it. I thought like every single thing was so cute and funny. Like what they're eating, like what they're driving, what the background looks like. I could see how much work you really put into it. I really love Taste of Venus. And I really relate to what you're saying about writing a sort of a medium that's like adjacent maybe to prose. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of reading between the lines, so tell me if I'm way out of line.
Oh no, you're correct. Okay.
just I wrote a comic script for like this like really famous comic writer who's a trans woman. She's amazing. She teaches great classes. I wrote a script for this class. I was like, I am amazing. I'm so proud of myself. I really pulled something off here. And she did like a public critique and she was like, frankly, I don't get it.
Oh, but that's okay. Listen,
I know, it was so humbling.
That's okay.
Yes, but that's, I think, what I'm saying is like exactly what you said of like, what do you mean I got to think about the angles? Like, there's just so much to it that is specific to the form of comics. And, you know, that's true for film and that's true for TV mm-hmm. and that's true for blah, 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 blah. We could do that all day. But I think it's so neat. So I'm curious for you, was there something you gained access to creatively through comics that you weren't able to do in prose that made you excited to keep working in the medium?
Oh, yes, that's a good question. So my prose, at least my fictional prose, sucks, right? So I can just be honest, it sucks. It's okay. It's getting better, but it sucks. But I will say writing comics and writing, you know, short comics, especially I've been writing comics between the pages, like 6 to 10 pages, right? So a full comic is 20 pages. So if I could write 10, 11, 12 pages, I can write a single issue. That's kind of like where my confidence is right now. But my, now that I have been writing more comics, my fictional prose has gotten better. I will say that I am more comfortable writing more action prose as far as like fictional prose, not in comics, but like writing action. For a while, I thought I was really kind of stuck with that type of technique. Like, how am I writing this action scene? Like, I know I want to write action, but it's not really coming through. So I've unblocked that barrier in my brain. I think that was the biggest thing, and being able to visualize the story. Because if I can't visualize a story, I can't really write it. And that actually brings me into like a project I'm actually doing now. I'm doing a private piece. I can't really talk about the popular fan fiction I'm doing. But basically someone, you know, a private, you know, customer wants me to write a script with a for popular, you know, IP. So it's basically fan fiction, right? Let's say I'm writing a fan fiction piece for My Little Pony. So they have an outline. You know, let's say celebrating their birthday, right? My Little Pony celebrated my birthday. I want this to start. I want this to happen at the end. I want this to happen in the middle. I want you to use these, you know, slang words and these dates and these, you know, they look like this. You fill in the rest. I think that is a skill that is similar to screenwriting and maybe TV writing because, you know, they give you a story and you have to like connect the dots to make it, you know, a fluid story that actually makes sense. So I think that's a good skill I have also picked up writing comics. Did I answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like it would translate so well to IP work in general, the ability to be able to play in someone else's sandbox, if you will.
Yeah, I would definitely love to do some like IP work, especially like, you know, young adult stuff. You know, I would love to do like an Archie. I would love to do
Well, I read your Tony Topaz like article. So if we're going to talk about Archie, we have to talk about Tony Topaz and Riverdale, right? Like, we can't not. So, like, what would you write?
No, if
you
were I don't want to talk about Riverdale.
I was like, do we have to?
Only to the extent that if you were going to write an Archie comic, we don't have to. Okay, forget Riverdale. It never happened. I never did. If you were going to write an Archie, I'm like, never mind. Sorry. If you were going to write a Archie comic, what would you want to focus on in that Archie world? Like, it doesn't have to be Archie's comic. You know what I mean? The Archie world of comics.
I would probably like to do maybe like a Jughead, like, asexual romance.
I'm in. Print it. I'm in.
Yeah, I would do that. I will also do Betty and Veronica girl crush because like why not?
I mean,
but it'll probably be like a mystery. I would like to do like a speculative mystery with those two. Sapphic speculative mystery.
Okay, someone get on this. Hire Erica right now. Print these comics. I want to read them. I want them.
I love Archie.
No, I will say I definitely tried to get into Archie when I was younger and it just didn't stick, but I respect it. So there you go, Essie.
Yeah, it was kind of like one of those things. Either you like... Okay, no. Did you like the Babysitter Club?
I love the Babysitter's Club. I had all the books.
Okay, see, I hated them and I definitely felt like I was the oddball because I was like, I can't. I just could not. It just not hit with me. So everybody loves Babysitter Club. I hate it. I don't talk about it because I know I'm the eyeball. So it's okay if you don't like Archie.
It's okay. We like what we like and we love what we love.
We like
and
what we like. Yes.
What if that's like an unknown opposite we didn't know? It's like you either love Archie or you love the Babysitter's Club. And we just discovered something no one else knows.
You heard it here first, people at Bitches on Comics. If you decide to do a study, please cite this and please contact Erica to talk
okay
about
let me ask you another
more.
Question Buffy, okay let me ask you a question. Would you choose Buffy or Charmed?
Hold up, you are not going to do that to me right now. I'm sorry. Listen, WB Wednesday nights were sacred.
Okay? It was Buffy first, and then it was Charmed. I cannot do that. I'm sorry.
I was sitting in front of my TV and with my black nail polish and my glitter eyeliner. Oh my.
Were we living the same life? Are we like doppelgangers or something? I'm low-key freaked out right now because I'm just like, I did the same thing.
You really are the same people. It's crazy.
Yes, on the south side of Chicago.
Yo. Well, Phoebe wearing the red lipstick?
I couldn't wear red lipstick, but I would try to do like dark purple.
I would just try and do Phoebe's lips, you know? And I was like, why don't I look like her? It's like, you look nothing alike. That's the main reason.
Oh, man. 90s alt goth. She just can't replace that. I'm just saying. But like, yeah, no, I can't decide. But I will say that like the 90s were like a definite like pop culture moment that is also like having its moment now, which makes me feel antiquated as fuck. But the music, movies, et cetera, were like prime. And like when I was reading Entanglement, I definitely felt that it had like a 90s like film noir take on it. Is that what you were aiming for? Or
so this is how I pitched it to Fabrice. So let me tell you, I begged to be in this anthology because it was the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And low key, I'm not going to even front. I think I was having like I think motherhood has made me a little bit more bolder, because there are things that I've done since being a mom that I would have never done or had the boldness to do before having a kid. So I just happened to come across this Kickstarter, and I saw who name was on it. David Walker, you know, Sean Martin Burroughs doing the foreword, Gary Phillips. I'm like, this is like who's who in black comics and mystery and speculative fiction. And I was like, if I'm going to write a comic and I want somebody to read it, I need to be part of this anthology. So I emailed Fabrice and I begged him. I was like, yo, I want to write a New Jack City Swing sapphic mystery. And so he was like, write an outline. And he's like, I've never written a comic before. I'm just a journalist, but I would love to write it if you teach me. And so he said, okay, I like the outline. And yeah, that's what I did. I begged. And he was like, if I have space, I'll consider you. And yeah, that's basically what started it. So that's how I pitched it. And yeah, I was definitely thinking about Queen Latifah with the 8-ball jacket and the bamboo earrings. And
that was definitely the vibe. Like, mm-hmm.
I was on Facebook arguing about Equalizer. Like, I don't play with me, okay?
Queen Latifah is a legend. And I'm
Equalizer is really fun. Like, it's she's so such fucking a badass. Good. She's such a badass action star. And oh my God, I'm so in love with her.
Only Queen Latifah could like have like old people and old white retired people like root for her, because she's on like exactly. CBS. She's on CBS. Exactly. Queen Latifah is carrying CBS with the drama and views right now. Seriously, like old white people.
And like,
love
and it's
Queen
about
Latifah.
Her like. Right, and she's like beating up people who are by and large
yeah!
like hurting
like,
women,
episode,
hurting black
yeah.
women. Like, it's so cool.
The first episode of Equalizer, she's taking out like an Elon Musk. Like, how could you not fuck
with
it?
It was so good. It was so good. And then I watched The Holiday, like right, like back to back with it, and I was like, the range.
Hold up, The Holiday, is that where she like leaves because she gets like the wrong like.
Yes, the diagnosis.
I love
yes.
that movie so oh. much.
Last Holiday. No, it's Last Holiday.
Last Holiday.
Sorry,
that movie
holiday.
Is so good.
Oh, it's so, and she's it's so fucking good. Hot in it the whole time. Oh my God, Queen Latifah.
This is a Queen Latifah stan account because
yes, it is. Actually, forget the old podcast. We are now only going to talk about how hot Queen Latifah is.
I mean, if we want to go that far, we could talk about Set It Off. And
oh my
like,
God, Set It
and
Off.
And how I like fall Yo,
I,
every time
when
I watch
saw, there's
ending.
An episode of Equalizer where Jada and her are like doing like a heist.
What?
I was telling my significant other, I was like, yo, for real, Jada Pinkett should have been Catwoman instead of Halle Berry, because Jada Pinkett has way more action under her belt. I mean, I feel like I love Halle Berry. This is not I love Halle Berry. This is not like a shade to her, but I feel like she has to grow into her action roles As opposed to Jada Pinkett, she's been acting like off the back, low down, dirty Shane. Like, she's been kicking ass forever. She was in Matrix. Like, she is an action star. I just feel like she should have definitely.
Oh, and Demon Knight.
And she was on the Penguin that was on. What was that?
Oh, Gotham. She's so good. Yeah. She was the best part of that. She was the best part of that show by far.
So, yeah, I love Jada in action. So, seeing her being, like, this really sassy, feisty thief with Queen Latifah on CBS is pretty lit.
That's pretty Queen Latifah, amazing.
If anyone ever give you this episode, I would love to write a comic with you. Oh, my God. Please, 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 please.
Whoever has access. I'd love to read one. Yes, whoever has access to Queen Latifah, I just want to say y'all should do that. Like, if you were even, like, 6 degrees of separation, send
I was
going to
say, we got a 6 degrees of Queen Latifah this. You know what I mean? There's got to be someone.
Or let me help you adapt books. I'm really good at that, too.
Okay. I feel like that's a solid pitch. I don't know. Please we'll keep see. Me posted if that does happen, because I will repost anything. I'm only on Blue Sky, but I will invite
you to the party.
Oh, thank you. Oh my God, I would die if I met Queen.
I'll drive Monica to the party. Like, yeah. Even if I can't come to the party, I'll drive.
Y'all
that's
will
fine.
Both come.
And okay, great. I'll be there.
Yes. Y'all both could come.
I'll actually dress like an adult. I promise.
Okay, but wait. Before we leave the 90s, I do want to say Telephone by Erykah Badu. So, like, that is probably one of her most favorite songs, one of her most famous songs, and is one of my favorite songs. How did yourself and Bliss come up with the idea to write a comic about it? And have you sent it to her?
All right, so I'm a Sagittarius, so I am a very, like, headstrong person. If someone tells me no, I just look for another door. Because if I feel like something is, like, really dope and it needs to be seen, I want to, you know, get it out there. Because if it stays with my spirit, I'm going to be mad. So,
right.
I love Erykah Badu. Like, I've seen her in concert many times. I love her music. I'm probably, like, in her 0.3% of Spotify listeners, for real. interview on YouTube with Erykah Badu was talking about, you know, the song Telephone. And she was saying how, you know, it was a song that she was inspired to write after talking to Jay Dilla's mother about the last moments of Jay Dilla before he succumbed to lupus. And I thought it was moving because I always thought the song had, like, a very eerie, gothic feel to it, but I just never knew the meaning of it, because the meaning is very vague, and it's vague on purpose, because it's, like, something that kind of, like, entrances you. So I was like, you know what? I was listening to the song, I was smoking some weed, and I don't know, I just saw it in my head. I was like, yo, this would probably be a dope visual concept, but I don't know who would be interested, you know? So I got a press release about this anthology, the ODB anthology. Now, you know, I'm just a regular, you know, pop culture journalist. So I get a bunch of press releases and, you know, copies for, you know, books and stuff like that. So they wasn't sending me anything outside of just like, hey, this is coming out. But I was like, this is dope. I want to pitch my comic idea to the editor to see if I could be included. They wasn't interested because, you know, deadlines and stuff like that. And the editor already had secured who they wanted to secure. But one of the people that was on the project thought my idea was dope. So they were launching a magazine on Kickstarter, which was very successful. And they bought my comic. And yeah, we did like 6 pages. So, yeah, he was like, I'm Troy, who was just recently hired at Mad Crave Studios Comics. Congratulations again. He already had an artist. He was like, I want to introduce you to Bliss. You know, Bliss has some really dope work. I loved his work. And I was like, yo, let me tell him what it is. And I think the challenge with Bliss is that, you know, Bliss is young. So, like, this doesn't resonate with him like it does me and Troy and other people our age. So I tried to give Bliss the best practices I thought would work. Like, you know, I give artists Pinterest boards, playlists, because I feel like I'm a new, you know, writer for comics and I want to be as transparent as possible. And I know sometimes I probably am not. So I try to give any artist collaborator I work with as many resources as possible. So magazines, anything visual, audio, I could just put in an email for them to like look at for reference, for inspiration, to let them know this is kind of like the mood I want to go for and everything like that. So after what, once we got that over that and everything was much clearer, Bliss got busy and it is just so beautiful. It's coming out soon. Troy's excited. I'm excited. You know, again, it was a successful Kickstarter. I've been lucky. This has been the third indie Kickstarter or crowdfunding campaign I've been part of, and they have been all successful. And I'm just, you know, really lucky about that because that's not something that everyone can say. I don't go into it with the expectation that it's going to be successful. I just know it's something that I like and it appeals to me and it's something I want to, you know, honestly do.
Well, what I heard was if you want to make sure your Kickstarter gets funded, you got to make sure Erica is part of your crew. That's what I heard.
Nah, no pressure. No, don't say that. I'm always like the last. I'm like the little, you know, last lamb to scurry on.
You're
in.
Like everybody in the be background. Locked in.
Yeah, like don't forget me. Or like y'all like Game of Thrones. I was gonna say when they saw the pups and they gave Jon Snow like the runt. That's me. I'm like the little runt. It's like, please let me in. Can I be part of this greatness?
There's really something here that you've said a couple times now where you just kind of reached out in goodwill and expressed interest in something that was happening and asked if you could be part of it. And you were told no sometimes and told yes others. And I'm curious if you mentioned, you know, some of that boldness coming from being a mother, but I'm curious, you know, for those of us who aren't going to have a kid or need a little more courage of some kind, do you have recommendations about how to be confident like that, about how to reach out, but when not to reach out? I don't know. I'm just curious.
Well, see, I'm also a journalist. So rejection is not something that I'm not used to. I'm used to rejection all the time. So for I have sure. a different, you know, different space for that.
Because yeah, you have to be okay with rejection to do that
work. So, but with creatives, you know, I have such respect for creatives, especially visual creatives. And I have respect for people who are really trying to put together indie passion products and deliver the best that they can. Because I know it's very hard to do. It's not easy. And for some of these creators to get together, get people to support, you know, and for them to come out and support and see them at cons and people buying it, it's just really cool, you know. And, you know, that's what I want to be part of. I want to be part of indie products, you know, indie projects. And I want, you know, people to support indie projects, not just mine, but just in general, because, you know, media is going to have a way different landscape than what people are going to be used mm-hmm. to. And it's going to be mm-hmm. these medias that are like nonprofits, that are reader run, newsletters are where you're going to get your more reliable information. Because, you know, I'm not an alarmist. At least I don't think I am. But the censorship of media and, you know, the access to the media by billionaires is only going to last for so long. It's unfortunate that, you know, a lot of our corporations are owned by just one or two, three people, right? It used to be a time mm-hmm. if you wanted to get a magazine job, you know, there was a whole bunch of magazines you could work for, mm-hmm. right? It was like mm-hmm. It was like at least 25 magazines offices in New York City, right? And 30 mm-hmm. here and 25 here. Now, no, one magazine, you know, has like 25 magazines under them. So yep. if you don't like this magazine, there's probably like a quarter of magazines you can't even apply for because it's all with the same company. Same with exactly. newspapers, you know, you can't even go from different stations because they're all being monopolized. So, you know, people deserve free information. People deserve as accurate information as possible. And it's okay to make mistakes, but to create content just to drive hits has never really been my MO.
you know, because that's temporary. You can't really judge a readership off things that people just click on because you're rage baiting.
So real. You know, I think Monica and I both come out of, you know, we talked about this before we started recording, you know, we come out of sci-fi fangirls. And so, you know, I don't always call my, I don't say what I do as journalism. I think of myself more as like a cultural critic or op-ed writer and doing less
that's
of that.
That's still a part of journalism. That's, you know,
it's definitely listen. Still part. You're right. You're absolutely right. You know, I just always want to be respectful because I'm not doing hard hitting anything, right? Like, I'm just way too tired from life to
do hard hitting stuff either. I don't do that much hard hitting stuff.
Fair enough. Fine. But, you know, I think that it was so weird working for such a big corporation. And then, you know, they cut our vertical and laid off dozens of queer, trans women, people of color. It was just not delightful. And so I've really been thinking a lot about, like, you know, how do we keep this intellectual thought, this rigor going, especially as it isn't just that they're firing people, right? They fire people and then they purge their websites. And this is like not even taking into account like what has happened since January 20th, right? Like I'm talking about like this is pre any of the executive orders. And I guess I've been thinking a lot about independent media. You know, Vera Drew, we had on the podcast, she's the star and director of The People's Joker. And she talked a lot about the importance of indie media. And so you're going to have to forgive me, Erica, but I'm going to quote you back to yourself because I was really into something you said. You said in an interview, "Now more than ever, we need independent media that delivers and highlights artists and creatives with cultural competency. I want everyone to support Afrofutures magazine because it's a futuristic platform where Black creatives can let their imagination run free without restraints." And I'd just love to hear a little more of your thoughts on independent media, which obviously I agree with you is needed more than ever. And then as well, how it frees, you know, to our conversation today, Black, queer, and trans creators, but also all marginalized creators can have more control and freedom in independent media. And I just want to hear a little bit more about your thoughts on that generally, if you have a thought on what lies ahead for independent media, any further thoughts, anything there?
Yes. Wow, that's actually a layered question because it actually, you know, whether you know it or not, ties into the Static book. Because of the time Static first issue dropped in 1996, there's a section that I'm focusing on and, you know, how the media is shaped by this, you know, at that time that in 1996, Bill Clinton had, you know, signed into this Telecommunication Act, which began, you know, kind of like that movement to shelter the number of ways and outlets people can have access to communication. So that's a really interesting question. You know, I am always going to tell people if they can buy a domain, buy any domain, your first and last name, anything, because you don't know which way the social media apps are going to run. And it's while it's good to commute, you know, create community on apps, you definitely want to be able to have control over your audience if you can, a newsletter, you know, anything, because you just never know. You know, I know influencer culture sort of shapes the way people use social media. You know, if you want to make money, you get on TikTok. If you want to do this, you get on Instagram. If you want this, you need to be on YouTube. But really controlling, having access to your information is really important, especially now, because you don't know what website is going to crash, who's going to have access to your information. You may not even be able to log in one day. Then what happens, you know? So I just want people to really think about where they're hosting and keeping their content and you know, try to self-host if you can, if possible, because again, we don't know anything right now. So that's really my advice. Control your own content.
I think that's really, really good advice. Some advice I've been hearing other folks talk about on the internet that I think dovetails nicely with yours is the idea that, you know, all the digital copies, like I have so many different digital copies of people's comics, friends sending them to me, review copies, whatever. And the idea of backing them up in like a thumb drive. So like if they're deleted off the internet, because we don't know where censorship is headed, but we've seen where it went in the past and it was no place good. Then we have these copies proliferated, especially of Black, queer, and trans voices. And so there's a lot of wisdom in this sort of being prepared and not panicking. It's kind of like a a both and. At least when you can, when you cannot panic, don't panic. Sometimes I panic. So I don't know. I think I'm ranting now.
Panic.
No, you're on the right track, because even now with, you know, this static book, you know, it's 2025. I'm having such a hard time accessing media before, honestly, 2010. You know, looking for, like, you know, because MTV cut their blog site down, right? And they was hosting articles since like the 90s, like the late 90s. Can't even get that anymore.
I didn't even think about that.
Internet Archive, like, y'all. Archive.org and Internet Archive. Like,
yes, you can access a lot of documents, but just being able to access, you might be able to see some of the old captions from it and everything, mm-hmm. but like accessing it like a newspaper. Like, you can go to the news library and like say, oh, I need this newspaper or whatever the case may mm-hmm. be. And you might be able to get the actual issue on digital. But like, you know, you can't, it's finding on the internet is really hard. It's been like, you know, I have to actually go into the library. I have to, you know, really research. And it's not a bad thing. I knew this was part of what I was getting myself into. I guess I assumed that articles after 2000 will still be easy to find on the internet, but it's not. I think that's one of the misconceptions that I have. Well, I had.
Do you feel like that's gotten worse lately? Or?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That's. Mm-hmm. I mean, I try and look up anything in those search engines that I will not be giving free advertising. And it's like 85 versions of the same AI written article. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, what is happening? This is not information. And that is, it's depressing. And I think, you know, obviously you have the research chops that you can work your way around that. And I think that's another thing I've seen people talking about on Blue Sky that I'm grateful for, is like, hey, we gotta reutilize these muscles. Like, you've let them atrophy. Okay, now we gotta be better at research, at seeing through propaganda, things we should not have let atrophy. And so I don't know. I think it's cool that you're finding a way through, but I'm sorry, it's hard.
It's okay.
It's actually really, it's scary, like, how, you know, because everything has become digitized, whoever has like ownership over it can just decide that it doesn't exist anymore. That's why there was like a major like hack on the Internet Archive not too long ago, because there is just a large amount of information there that will not exist outside of the digital world, which is why I'm also like a very huge advocate for physical media. I love collecting VHS tapes. I still have VHS tapes from when I was a kid, like cassette tapes. I still use cassette tapes, like all of that stuff. I'm just like, you know, if you're buying something and you don't own it
physically, then like you don't own it.
Then morally, yep. Like piracy is not theft. If you want to think about it. I'm just saying, if you buy it and they say that like you can't physically have it, you know what I'm saying? But anyway, I'm not advocating that we steal art, because no, as a filmmaker and an artist, that. Like, I like, no, don't do that. Support artists. You know what I mean? Corporations.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm just going to leave it there. Anyway, I'm just going to leave it there. And y'all can make your own, you know, whatever. Fill in the blanks, if you will.
Y'all are so funny. Y'all are hilarious.
I'm just saying. Don't sue me. I have no money.
Hey, you. You love Bitches on Comics, huh? You want to see us succeed and find many listeners and be happy little bugs? Well, then take a moment to rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Don't worry, we'll wait. No, really, go do it right now. Did you do it? Of course you did. We appreciate you taking the time to give us 5 stars and tell everyone how great we are.
Tunes or whatever, and I never, like, I loved it because, like, one, outside of Batman Beyond, I don't know if y'all remember that cartoon.
Yes,
of course.
Batman Beyond.
That's how I mean, we're millennials. Isn't that how millennials learn morals, is like from Batman, you know?
It's the true Batman cartoon? I mean, it made me learn that, like, Planet. Maybe I will have a villain origin story, so that's what I took from I was like, oh, right. Okay, maybe I should start talking. I'm just... That was such a maniacal-ass laugh. But anyway, outside of like Maxine, who was the pink-haired sidekick, if you will, Static Shock was like the one cartoon where it's like, you know, black folks, right? And I'm just interested, like, what has been your relationship with writing so far? Outside of doing research and stuff like that, what has been like your personal like relationship to working on this project?
Well, it's a mix of bumblefuck. Part is, you know, there's this anxiety because, you know, I'm not talking about like some character only like a few know, you know, I'm talking about a beloved character that is popular despite not maximizing all media to ensure that everybody knows about this character. But there's also, I feel like, as a millennial that is a writer, I feel like it's my duty to sort of not just highlight this Black creativity, but because I am part of the time frame that it happened. So it's not like, yes, I have to do research, but I also lived during the time. And I think that just hits different versus someone who may have not lived during that time while reporting on the piece. So I think it has more authenticity to it. And love and care. So yeah, I'm just hoping that that, you know, translate in the project. It's not a big book. It's going to be about 100 pages or so. But it's part of a bigger collection where people can just read about deep dives into some of their favorite characters. I believe Power Rangers is on the list.
Whoa.
Yeah. So you think you know the Power Rangers.
Wow.
Yeah, I want to say Brother Man Comics was on the list. I actually wanted to do Brother Man Comics first, but that didn't work out for me. So I did I'm doing Static.
Nice. Very okay. Cool.
Yeah, but it's a list of characters, beloved characters that people will love to know more about. So I'm just happy to be a part of it. And again, the review part is the really scary part because it's going to be reviewed by other comic book scholars and it's going to be pretty intense. So I have to ensure that all my research and all my information is, you know, top tier.
Which I'm sure you will have no problem doing.
Yeah, but it's the idea of writing like the bibliography page, like, oh God, I got to write that.
No, I get it. 1,000%, especially because I'm having my junior review at school right now. So I'm also going through the process of like meticulously picking through everything just to make sure that I don't make myself look like a fool out here. But
child.
You got it. You got it. I know you got it. And I support you 1,000%. And I'm really excited to check it out when you do finish. Essie, do you have any more questions before we wrap up?
You know, I just wanted to say how excited I am that there's going to be something looking at Static Shock longitudinally in such a tight way, especially because Static Shock season one Static season one is the title. The one that was written by Vidya Ayala with the layouts by Chris Cross, art by Nicholas Draper Ivy is just, it was such an incredible return. I think it was, is it 2022 or 2023? Do you remember, Erica? Not to put you totally on the spot, but
2023.
Okay. Believe. Right. Yes. I was gonna say that, and then I was like, wait, was it actually 2022? Time's not real. But I thought it was such an exciting moment for Static Shock. And I guess I would just love to hear a little bit about when you think about that longitudinal, that long term, that long life of the character. What are you hopeful for in the future of Static Shock?
What I hope for the future of Static, I hope the creators get paid as they're worth. I hope they are given the space to present Static in a way that they approve to their standards. And for them to be independent from the powerhouse of DC Comics overall. That's what I hope for the future is static because people want to see static. People will like go head over heels right now if like Max dropped like a brand new static animated series. Like no questions asked.
I feel like people will freak out. Like absolutely. Yes.
I think you could drop anything. Any live action, yeah. Any animated, and I think people would go nuts.
Yes, and recently there has been a release of Icon Toys from Milestone Media figurines. So I don't know what's coming down the pipeline. No one knows. No one, you know, everyone's keeping hush hush about it. So okay. I guess we're all going to be waiting to see.
All right.
I am absolutely here for like all of the millennial nostalgia coming back. I feel like it's our time. It's our time.
We need something to keep us happy.
I was going to say, we deserve something. After, you know, it's like we graduated into every recession, everything's been a nightmare. Give me Static Shock, okay? It's all I really want.
I just want to sit in the house and like watch Star Trek and like braid a my size Barbie hair or something. And like play Zelda and just watch everything burn. Like,
oh my God. I think zone that's out. Actually a good plan. I'm not even going to lie. I'm just like, well, actually, now that you mention it, what is stopping me from doing all of these things? I'm a quote adult now and I can make my own choices. Yeah, I dropped out of school. No, I'm just kidding.
No. I literally played Zelda last week and I literally watched Star Trek yesterday. So, Erica, you got my number.
Yes, because listen, so I didn't even know that they had like a Star Trek channel on Pluto. So, like, sometimes, you know, I like to have like background noises, like, you know, when I'm working. So, like, I just turned it on and it was just random and it was like for like 2 hours straight. I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm watching Star Trek now. Okay, so I've been like on Blue Sky posting my reactions to certain things. It's been funny to me.
Wait, which Star Trek?
A lot of these episodes I remember. Yeah, Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine, yeah. Next Generation was always my favorite.
That's my favorite too. They're just so horny.
They're so horny. I was just talking to my wife about how it's just Riker being like, I like aliens. I like to fuck aliens. Oh, you're non-binary? That's the greatest thing I've ever heard. You're just like, what is happening?
He'd be like, yeah, I want to fuck aliens and listen to jazz. Jazz
man. And honestly, I kind of get it. I kind of get it, you know? There's an appeal. Deanna's like, could you just stop thinking that so close to me?
I'm dead.
Oh, right.
Y'all are so funny.
No, DS9 is basically everybody trying to throw it on Cisco. And he's like, no, I am the captain. I am reasonable.
Oh my God. I also get Benjamin. That. I would also be doing that.
A Benjamin.
We could have like those things in Star Trek, the technology, the like post society, but we're like still stuck in this rut. We have the technology that is advancing, but we still just have people who rather see everything burn than give equality to everybody. Not to be a downer. I'm just saying.
Like, no, the American way.
I'm just saying. High speed rail. Say it with me. Mm. It would be amazing.
It would be amazing.
You know what blows my mind? It's like in Turkey, there's a day where you go to the doctor and they do all the things and then you have better health outcomes. What a concept. What a concept that you could go to a doctor and prevention might do better. Holy what the fuck?
That's crazy. That's crazy talk. I don't believe you. I don't think that's
what it works. Mark is like, I've never heard of Turkey. I don't believe it exists.
I don't think it does not exist. Actually, that's the most American shit ever, actually. It's just like, Turkey? What the fuck is that? I don't know. I don't even know where that is on the map. That's not
Can't
a real country.
Real.
Fake news.
Can't be real.
Fake.
Oh, God.
News. I'm sorry. It's funny. But on that note, I will say, you know, just also like Chicago, like rep, you know, from a quote from Lucy Parsons, if you don't know who Lucy Parsons is, definitely look her up. Never be deceived that the rich will allow you to vote their wealth away. Mic drop.
Mm. Wow. You know what? I feel like today we've covered a few topics. Just a couple. You know, I feel like this was a straight up ADHD vibe the entire episode. I think all of our listeners who are neurodivergent are going to be like vibrating afterward. Just like, yes, exactly. Our neurotypicals, we still like you. We still love you. If this was hard to follow, like, imagine what it's like for us in your
Welcome
world.
Welcome to
everywhere.
My life, bro.
Exactly.
Like, feel sorry for my partner.
That's funny. That's
be a support
funny.
Group.
Oh, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. Oh my gosh. Okay, we've talked about Taste of Venus and the We Belong anthology. If you haven't picked it up yet, go get it at Stack Deck Press. We will link to it in the show notes. We've also talked about Telephone and Afro Futures. I don't know of a link for that right now, Erica. Do you have one for that that I could put in the show notes?
Yep.
Perfect. I'll get that added after the fact. So, listener, you'll be able to go click on that as well. Well, of course, Erica, we'll have you share your social media handles, website, any other links you want to share here on the air, please feel free. But I will also link them in the show notes so you don't have to spell everything out. But Erica, if people want to find you on social or online, where would you point them?
I'm on Blue Sky. You can follow me as Rosa Sparks.
Perfect.
Why are you laughing?
I love following you. I actually didn't realize it was you because I laughed because this is my problem. I'm a nightmare on social media because I memorize people's handles and their profile pictures, and then that's the identity I create in my head for that person. I was talking to you on the internet the other day, did not realize it was you. I was just laughing that I had forgotten that you were Rosa Sparks, and the whole thing just made me laugh. You know, living my own little secret life over here, just giggling to myself.
Yeah, I really like Blue Sky. It's a nice. Lot more calmer, and like so many creatives I've been following, and oh my goodness, it's like walking through a gallery of different things, and there's something always on the left, right, up, above. Everything is everywhere. Mm-hmm. I like that. That's what I expect out of social media. But yeah,
it does seem pleasant, and you know, and the trolls are a little bit amateurish, so they're really easy to ignore. They're not good enough trolls, I'll say. Well, good for you. I hope you get none. That's what the vibes I'm sending. No trolls for Erica.
Yeah, because right. I've been on my good behavior.
I'm never on good behavior, so maybe that's why. That's where I got my trolls. Erica, you are so funny. You are so insightful. This was
y'all are
absolute,
funny.
Oh, stop. No, this was a delight. Monica, obviously.
Y'all are who?
Well, we had a good time today. There was definitely a point where I think all three of us were talking and laughing all at the same time.
Because we were excited.
We were so excited. It was a moment. It was a moment. I really enjoyed it. I hope it's not too hard to edit, Kate. Thanks for editing
this oh my
for
gosh.
Us.
Kate, we love you so much.
Thank you. I apologize.
You, they're going to be
if
like,
you,
you
want
didn't
some
have
cookies,
to apologize.
If you want some baked goods, let me know.
That's actually the new fee we charge is baked goods.
Baked goods.
That's what the future requires. That's part of that independent barter system. listeners, we couldn't be happier that you're here listening. We could have the podcast without you, but it'd be awfully strange. So thank you for tuning in. And again, patrons, we actually couldn't be here without you. Thank you for keeping the lights on, or if you will, the mics on. I think that joke's funny. No one ever laughs, but I'm having a good time. So thank you, everyone. We hope you'll tune in again next month. We'll be back with more great interviews. And until then, Erica, give yourself a big hug and a high five. You fucking rule. Monica, give yourself a hug and a high
five. Thank you. Y'all are so cool.
This was so cool. You are so cool.
You are cool. Yeah, exactly. We're all
fucking
cool.
Y'all are funny as hell.
You're listening to Bitches on Comics, distributed by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Find more shows like Bitches on Comics by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Bitches on Comics is a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Blue Sky at Bitches on Comics. You can sign up for our newsletter, listen to any of our episodes, find curated lists of where to start listening, read interviews available nowhere else, and learn about our other projects and upcoming appearances at bitchesoncomics.com. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also buy us a coffee or send us a one-time morale boost at ko-fi.com/queerspec. That's ko-fi.com/queerspec.
You can also support the podcast by joining us on Patreon. Head to our Patreon page at patreon.com/queerspec to learn more.
I'm Essie Fleenor, and you can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Blue Sky at essiefleenor. You know, the whole thing.
I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and you can find me at my website, Audrey's Revenge Film, listed below. Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
If you like Bitches on Comics, you might also enjoy our narrative fiction podcast, Decoded Horror Channel, available wherever you get your podcasts or at decodedpride.com.
Be sure to check out our show notes to find a link to donate to campaigns engaged in important work.